humans dance, it's what we do. So many of our important ceremonies and rituals throughout history include dancing, courtly ballrooms and weddings and school discos. Our favourite dances and dance halls also reflect the times, and they reflect us. From the twist in the 1960s to the Macarena of the 90s, there is a particular joy and connection that comes with moving to music alongside other people. Well, so says music and culture writer Emma Warren. But she says the opportunities to gather together and dance are diminishing with the closing of venues like nightclubs and dance halls. Her new book looks at the importance of dance as a political act, a way to express ourselves, and as a source of solidarity too. It's called Dance Your Way Home, a journey through the dance floor. And Emma Warren joins me now. Hi.
Hi, Jesse. Thank you for having me.
Nice to talk to you. Can anyone dance, Emma?
Yeah, if you can dance, you're a dancer. That's the opening line of my book, and trenchantly so, because I just don't understand why dancing has become conflated with having to be particularly skillful. It's just like a very normal, very human
So does a human like to dance, or does a human need to dance?
Interesting. Well, I might suggest that we are both more human and more humane when we dance together, because dancing together collectively makes us like each other more. And the book is, it's absolutely about dancing spaces, but it's really specifically about what dancing together does for us individually and collectively, and that the dance floor can be almost anywhere. It can be your friend's kitchen. It can be a kind of village green. It can be a culturally powerful nightclub. It's just all these places are important dance floors, and I think these are places that we need.
And does the fact that you wrote most of this book during pandemic lockdowns play into your conviction that we need dance as a group activity, as a way to connect with each other?
I think what the pandemic did was make everybody much more aware of how important it is, because I know a lot of people really missed it when they couldn't access it. I'm lucky enough to have had a lot of regular dance floors in my life, and so I already knew that it was important, and I already knew that it was valuable, but I do appreciate that that was invisible to many people. Mostly, I think, because people conflate dance floor or dancing with nightclub and maybe things are a bit more controversial. But I just think dancing is really normal, and we need lots of different places to do it at all kind of phases of our life, whether we're children or young or middle-aged or old.
Could I be brave and say that it's not a very English thing to dance with wild abandon?
Interesting. Well, I'd say two things about that. One, doesn't have to be wild abandon. I'm quite a shy dancer, actually. I love it, but I'm definitely not in the middle of the dance floor, and I'm not like playing around. I'll find my little spot in the corner, and I'll dance it out. But this question of Englishness is really, really interesting, because dancing is cultural. And when I was trying to reckon with this question about Englishness and dancing, I just thought, well, you know what? Let me try and find out how people danced in like really olden English days, in the Anglo-Saxon times. And turns out Anglo-Saxons did a lot of dancing. There were like Larry dance-ups in ale houses, girls who'd go dancing together in the woods, all kinds of dancing that people would just do together. And so this idea of English people not dancing, I think, actually relates probably to, the deep and dark topic of empire. And the need to be powerful, and the powerful needing to be still and not leak any information through their bodies. It's really deep. There's a brilliant writer in the US called Maxine Leeds Craig, who wrote a book called Sorry I Don't Dance, Why Men Refuse to Move. And she has some absolutely fascinating ideas about these whole questions of what you described as Englishness, but actually might relate to demographics who have historically exercised more control over other demographics.
So that's part of, because that's a big problem for me. I mean, my wedding day 9 years ago, best day of my life, the first dance, the worst 2 minutes of my life. And it's such a guy, it's a guy thing, isn't it? You have to be dragged onto the dance floor unless you've, partaken in enough intoxicants that you're no longer self-conscious. That's the cliche anyway.
Well, yeah, but you know what? I think for men who are hesitant dancers, maybe they can ask themselves why, and maybe there might be a way that they could show a bit of solidarity with people who supposedly are allowed to move, you know, often women, feminized men, people of color, and, you know, join in, show some solidarity, and also you might find you like it.
You realize pretty early on, probably at the school disco, that if you dance in a particularly distinctive way or if you stick out, you might get made fun of. Did that nearly happen to you?
Well, it did happen to me because, you know, as like a little teenage girl in my white boiler suit with matching kind of like jewelry of all one color around my wrists and neck and earrings, I like mistook my love for gymnastics with how you were supposed to behave at a school disco. And some boy laughed at me for doing high kicks. And I really distinctly remember how much that made me want to stop moving. It didn't make me stop, but I have other friends who've had experiences where people have, you know, said terrible things to them, like, "Oh my God, you're the worst dancer I've ever seen," or "Oh, you dance like a mum," which that's an interesting diss, isn't it? Why is that a bad thing? Mothers are incredible. So there's so much tied up in these questions, and I just think it was so gorgeous for me to spend all this time like thinking about all the experiences I've had on the dance floor and talking to people who shared my belief that it's important, and to find out a bit more about what's going on when we dance together.
It's tempting to think of dancing as escapism, you know, you let yourself go. But you've got a great quote by a Detroit-based DJ. He says it's not about escapism, it's about solidarity.
Yes, absolutely. And the quote that he gave, he allowed me to use, came from a Facebook post that he made, which related to a kind of more political situation that kind of predated the Black Lives Matter kind of uprising. And he was really asking European DJs who deal with music that is made by communities of color, and just saying, why can't you, how can you play this music and not understand what this is really about? And I just think there's something, when I say solidarity, there's something about dancing together that does create bonds. There's some really good research, for example, about children dancing together, that they like each other more afterwards. And I was reminded of this. I've some friends, some Londoner friends, who've just recently moved to New Zealand, and they posted about their kids learning the haka at primary school. The kids have just learned their first haka. And it just struck me as such a beautiful way of being invited into a community and becoming part of a community to dance together in a really powerful way, so rich and participative. And that just struck me as that's kind of solidarity in action, isn't it? Someone arrives to your village, you teach them your dance, and they become part of your community because you're dancing together.
That's great. You mentioned some research, by the way. I'm looking at some from this University of Oxford dancer researcher Bronwyn Tarr, and she asked teenagers from a Brazilian high school to dance to fast electronic music in groups of three. And what did she find?
She found that the groups that danced together liked each other more than the other people. So if you had danced with other people, you were going to rate them more highly than the other people in the room. And so I think, again, it just shows that when we dance together, we exchange communication on this level, which is not about, it's not verbal, and it cuts across some of the ways in which we're divided. It can cut across age, it can cut across ethnicity and class demographic. I'm not saying it's a utopia. The dance world can also be quite a risky place. But I'm saying that it's a really normal and really human thing to do that somehow, for some of us anyway, has been hived off as like separate and something you have to be good at. And I'm just saying, I think we can just do more ordinary dancing together. And that's a really beautiful and humane thing to do.
What about if I'm on the sidelines at a really kicking dance party and I'm sort of watching people dance, but I'm not getting involved? Any chance I'll reap any of the benefits?
Well, absolutely, because for example, people who just watch dance online, and there's so much gorgeous dance online, you know, I see incredible dancers every day on my social media feeds. You get some of the benefits. You know, it's quite hard to watch amazing dancing without feeling something, without smiling. Your body will receive some of the information. But, you know, I think there's a dance movement therapist that I spoke to from Chicago, and She said something like, "Oh, you can get so much benefit from watching dance, you're just not going to burn the calories," which I thought was quite a cute way of saying it.
I'm talking to Emma Warren. Her book is called Dance Your Way Home, A Journey Through the Dance Floor. And there's a historical aspect to your writing as well, Emma. You talk about recalling some of your favourite dances, the running man or the dubstep, and you write that sometimes for a moment or two, the movement would unlock a sense of how things really felt at the time, in the same way that a scent or a piece of music can transport you. Is that another way of thinking about dance? A kind of a special way of making history accessible.
I think so, yeah. I mean, you can't ever return to a kind of previous state, but you can get a sense of it. You know, that feeling when you smell something like a perfume you haven't smelled for a long time. Like, oh my God, I just for a moment just remember how I felt at that moment. And my experience is that dance can do that. I think also there's something really interesting about connection, particularly for diaspora communities or communities who come from people who moved from one country to another. So in a small way, I would count myself among that number because my maternal grandmother immigrated from Ireland to England as a teenager to find work as a nurse. And there's a really interesting thing about the Irish in Ireland, often who had people who had left to England or the US or elsewhere, including, Australia and New Zealand. And by dancing on similar dance floors to similar music, you could feel a sense of connection with your people who were elsewhere. And for the ones who've gone to other countries who are not going to see their family back at home again, that same thing exists in reverse. You can connect with your people who are elsewhere by dancing to the same music on similar dance floors. And I think there's a sense of connectedness, or certainly in the chapter which you're referring to, which is about 1930s Ireland. I found so many examples of the ways in which people created connections with their loved ones who were elsewhere through the dance floor.
Can't talk to a dance researcher without mentioning the great academic work Footloose.
Oh yeah, personally, I'm a bit more profane, but yeah.
it's based on the true story of a town that banned dancing, and there are still places in the world where dancing remains off limits. Why do you
Yeah.
think that dance is so forbidden, so feared?
Well, I mean, when you're actually, imagine you're like a work do, or you're having a little kitchen dance with your family, or you're, dancing in a kind of nightclub discos type scenario. It doesn't necessarily feel very political, but we can tell it's political by the way that the state responds to it, because often the state will respond by squashing the dance, by creating really very repressive legislation. And this is especially common in right-wing or more fundamentalist governments. So if you think about the new government in Italy, the right-wing government under Giorgia Meloni, one of their very first acts was a law which made it much, much, much more illegal to organize a dance party with your friends without a license. Now they call it an anti-rave law. And as soon as you use the word rave, you come to kind of immediately thinking, oh my gosh, this is about illegal things. But really, it's just groups of people who want to dance together, to dance out the stresses they carry with them. That's suddenly really illegal, huge fines, prison sentences. And this is really, really common. Right-wing regimes in particular love to make it very difficult for people to assemble in a free way and to move to music together. And I just think that's because it's powerful and because it makes us like each other more. And when we like each other more, we're more likely to act in solidarity with each other, and to be connected and to have strong relationships.
Yeah, you mentioned a couple, or you mentioned Ireland, and there are a couple of good examples there. I mean, jazz was very problematic, hard to believe now, but problematic on both sides of the Atlantic, but particularly with the clergy in Ireland. Why were they so upset about the foxtrot?
And the waltz. I mean, it's so when you look back at it, it's just sometimes really impenetrable. Like, how could anyone have had a problem with this? But I think whenever young people, the youth, adapt or adopt new dance moves, there will always be people who will find this shocking and horrific and like a breakdown of morals. And that's just that kind of comes to the territory of generational differences. But there's also the way in which the church, particularly in Ireland at that time, was very keen on controlling people's bodies. And you find faith organizations, all over the world that are also very keen on controlling people's bodies, often particularly women's bodies. And part of the way they exercise that control is by trying to decide when, where, how women, young people, can dance, and how and when they can dance together, and to make sure they're in bed early. So in the Irish example, a lot of the things I found in newspaper reports at the time was the clergy just saying that people should be in bed early. They just didn't want them out late. And whereas the people, many people, just wanted to go out, dance all night, and bang the walls if the music was good enough, which it sounds like it was frequently.
Well, I don't know your age, but I'm late 40s, so we kind of
You're about the same.
take it for granted that that dance halls and places to dance are just part of everyday life. But now that I've settled down and not really going out onto the town so much, am I missing the fact that they are starting to disappear, that this might not be a given?
Well, I mean, I did try and find out a bit about the situation in New Zealand before we spoke, but I wasn't actually able to find out quite how much your kind of communal dancing spaces are affected by the things that affect communal dancing spaces in so many countries. Late stage global hyper-capitalism, often gentrification, all those sorts of things are the fact that people are just wanting to stay at home for various reasons, massive social anxiety amongst young people, all sorts of different things. But I'm not even really saying that we need fancy places to dance. I'm just saying, well, we do need some of those ideally, but really we just need to make sure that we're carving out the spaces to dance that we need in our communities, whether that's like really low key and local, whether it's like a little under 18s disco for, the young ones, or whether it's places that, people with youngish families can move to music together.
What about cell phones? No one wants to see their dancing go viral. Is that putting a bit of a chill on it?
I mean, that's definitely a bit rough, isn't it? I mean, it's a horrible thing to like tease someone for doing something really human, like moving from left to right. But of course it happens. And you know what? All of these things have ups and downs. There's so much amazing dancing on social media. So many young people have absorbed absolutely loads of dance through TikTok, for example, and so are very dance literate. But then there's also the problem of, social anxiety and your image being captured without your consent or shared without your consent. And maybe these are just conversations we need to begin to have. We have conversations about what should be shared on, between friends and questions of consent. And maybe we just need similar things around people who are dancing. Maybe it should just become really, really rude and unacceptable to film someone dancing and to share it. I kind of think it's a pretty rude thing to do, to laugh at someone for dancing, but maybe I'm just scarred from my high kicks at the school disco. I don't know.
I'll ask you straight, Emma. Do drugs make dancing better?
That's a really interesting question, because the assumption is that drugs and dancing are linked, but I actually don't believe that's the case. I was going out as a very young underage teenager in the kind of acid house times in London, where apparently everybody was on drugs. But I wasn't, and my friends weren't. And so in this book, one of the things that I've tried to do is to tell those other stories. There are other people who were also in those clubs who'd come from often communities of color, who had a lot of dancing in their family networks, who just didn't need that extra doorway into dancing, and for whom maybe being involved in drugs was extra problematic. So yeah, of course, in some cases, people take drugs. But I think if you were to do a kind of sweep of the toilets in a certain expensive restaurants, you'd probably be just as likely, if not more likely, to find narcotics than you would in a dancing situation. So I don't think the two things are the same. I think maybe some people, it makes it easier for them to dance, as it might, alcohol might with other people, also a drug, obviously, but not for everybody. I just think maybe there are other barriers to dancing, which are to do with confidence and what society tells you about how you should move, which actually are more of a barrier to movement than whether or not people are taking drugs.
Lots of cultures around the world have their own dances, and the old gag is that in England you have the Morris dance, which is not very cool. However,
Hey,
I understand your
this
lot.
is going on.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the thing about Morris dance not being cool. I mean, it wasn't, but it is changing because there are some Morris dancers from the southwest of England called Boss Morris, like boss as in like boss man, all women, and they're really cool. And they did a performance at the Brit Awards with the band Wet Leg,
Amazing.
which actually just completely amazing. And so, yeah, I think they're doing a good job of revitalizing something from the olden days and making it relevant for now. They're pretty
Great.
cool, actually.
Yeah. Nonetheless, you are campaigning for a new national dance, and you've suggested that the electric slide might be a good option. What is that exactly?
I'm not really campaigning for it. I'm just, when I was thinking about the question of national dance, you know, in some countries that's kind of easy to answer. But in England, it was a bit more difficult when I asked friends, what do you think is our national dance? And by that, I mean, what is the dance that everybody knows how to do? And obviously, everybody, not my everybody, is everybody's everybody. You know, everyone in the playground might know how to do heads, shoulders, knees, and toes, for example. But it just struck me that the electric slide is a dance which arrived in the UK with diaspora communities, which kind of percolated for a while within certain communities and gradually is moving into a more mainstream situation. For those not familiar with it, shall I explain what it is, Jesse?
Yes, please.
Yeah. Okay, so usually done to the song Candy by Cameo. And it's a grapevine one. So it's a bit like a line dance, really, but you kind of step to the side and clap, and then you step to the other side, then you clap, and then you step back. And then there's this kind of little lean back and a lean forwards and a little hop turn that turns you round so that you go in the other direction. So it's like called a four wall dance. You're facing each of the four walls bit by bit.
I'm just
Popular
what
at weddings.
yeah, I'm just having a look at it online. Is it would I be right in saying there's not much sliding that goes on?
Oh, but the slide is kind of the groove that you bring
Oh yeah,
to
okay.
the song. And also the name also relates to the piece of music that it was originally choreographed to. There's this kind of funny story about the way in which it began life in one way, generated or kind of ended up with another life in another way in New York nightclubs, and then ended up being reconnected with the song. And then due to a scene in a film called The Best Man, which was made in the 90s by Malcolm D. Lee, the filmmaker, who is, I believe, the cousin of Spike Lee, maybe, certainly the extended family. And in the final scene of the film, there is an electric slide, but to Cameo by Candy by Cameo, which is why in the UK, for most people under 35, that's the only song it is ever danced to. And over that age, didn't grow up with it. So it's a kind of dance which arrived at a certain moment in time, which you would only know how to do demographically, depending on who you are and where you're from. A bit like Gangnam Style. Anyone that was a certain age at that point would have known how to do Electric slide, kind of a similar thing.
Thanks for explaining it to the post 35s today. Good to talk to you and congratulations on the book. There's so much in
Thank
there, we've
you
barely
very much.
scratched the surface, but I've been talking to music and culture writer Emma Warren, and her book is called Dance Your Way Home: A Journey Through the Dance Floor. Thanks, Emma.
Thank you very much.
Oh, by the way, if we wanted to play a song that would get people moving this afternoon in New Zealand, what would you put on the turntable?
Well, I think maybe a good one for a little afternoon dance up is Hey Mickey by Tony Basil, which I talk about in the very beginning of the book because I spoke to Toni Basil for the book.
Wow.
She told me some excellent things. And so maybe we should celebrate the excellent woman that is Toni Basil with a little blast of Hey Mickey.
Fantastic. No pom-poms necessary. Here's Hey Mickey by Tony Basil.